Okay, so I just wanted to sort of a continuation from last week, finish up on that topic about in the beginning of Vayishlach. So it's really beginning Vayishlach, Perek Lamed Beis, it's Pasuk Hey. Okay, so last week we were talking about how Yaakov represented himself to Esav in a way that would be conciliatory and would be something that would promote reus, promote friendship and brotherhood, and to dispel any sources of sinah. That was really his objective. Okay, so the thing is that in Pasuk Hey, it also his message begins actually in Pasuk Hey, the message that Yaakov gave to the Malachim. So it says, "Vaitzava somle mor," and he commanded them, saying, "Ko somun ladani leisav." This is what you should tell my brother. "Ko amar avdcha Yaakov." Okay, this is what your brother Yaakov, your servant Yaakov says, "Im lavan garti va'echar arata." So I dwelt with Lavan, and I remained there until now. Okay. So what's the significance of that message? So if you take a look at Rashi, he says in Garti, Rashi says, okay, lo na'asisi sar v'chashuv ela ger. Okay, so the first part of the message is good. So he says Garti implies ger. So I never really attained anything. You know, I'm not. I didn't become a big shot. I didn't actually establish myself. So einicha kedai lisnoa osi. No reason to hate me. Al brachos avicha, for the brachos. Shibarchani have a gvir la'achecha. That the bracha was that you'll be mastery, have mastery over your brother. Sharlin niskaimabi. Wasn't niskaim in me. You see, I have no stature here, so nothing to be worried about. Okay, so that's good. That we can understand. So what does it mean that he actually told him that? I mean, again, he used the term that would convey that message, right? Rashi's not saying that he actually told them that the Malachim should go tell Esav this exact thing, that I live there and I have no stature and you don't have to worry about the brachos. Right? Because that we mentioned last week. You don't always have to be so forward, so upfront with a person, especially if you're trying to create a nice relationship with somebody. So it's you don't come out and say everything. The important thing is not so much what the explicit message, right? But you present the message sometimes in a covert way, where the way you say it, a person, it conveys a certain idea subtly in the person's mind. So Yaakov used the term garti to convey the message. I was a ger there. I never really. It's subtly hidden in the message. Why did he use garti, ger? He could have said, I was there, I settled there. But he used a term that would convey to Esav a sense of a certain sense of comfort. Okay, we convey that aspect, that he was not too settled there. You see, but it was covert. It was covert. Okay? Because the important things, really, the important messages that a person usually gets is covert. You see, the mind notices certain things subtly, and it seeps in. Okay? And that affects a person sometimes more than the conscious thoughts that a person has. A person could consciously think a certain thing, but there's something sometimes that in the back of his mind that is bothering him or settling him. And those things in the back of the mind very often have a greater influence on his actions. Okay, because he's not really too aware of them, and they're affecting him in an unknown way, even unknown to him. So that's an interesting thing that Yaakov used. You see, and it's an important thing to know. When you speak to a person, sometimes realize that the things in the back of his mind sometimes have more control over him than any message you're trying to implant in his mind consciously or overtly. You see? Sometimes little nuances can have more effect on a person than you know. Sometimes a person wants to affect somebody, he comes out and tells them and thinks he's really going to lecture him and affect his opinion. Forget it. Right? So the soft touch is sometimes much more important. Okay, so that's what Yaakov was using, that idea. Okay, which is a true idea. Okay. So that's very good. But then you look at the next part of Rashi. He says, Davar Acher, Garti begematria Taryag. So Garti, if you add up the numerical value of the letters, you'll come to Taryag. I didn't do it, but I'm just... Is it true? I mean, I'm just... I'm assuming he's correct, right? Taryag is... so you have the Taf, you have the Yud. What? Yeah, you got it. Yeah, you got all the... Right, you don't even have to use... You don't have to... Right? It's the same letters, right? Yeah. Okay, good. Okay, so that's Bigamachi is Tayag Kolomar. So what does it mean? Im Lavan Harasha Garti. So I stayed with Lavan Harasha. The Tayag Mitzvah Shamarti. And I kept Tayag Mitzvah. I kept the Torah. V'lo Lamadati Mi Mice of Harayim. And I didn't learn. He didn't have an influence on me. He did not divert me from the Derech Emes. I kept the Torah.
Are you used here as like all encompassing term for Torah, because like they didn't have Taryag then, so like, is that
right? So that's a whole question, right? That's discussed. Did they keep the Torah? Did they not keep the Torah? Did they have the Taryag mitzvahs?
The Taryag is there's mitzvahs that weren't even, but they didn't have mitzvahs.
That's right.
That could even exist then.
That's right. So you could say the Taryag meant the ideas of the Torah. In other words, those ideas.
Rashi using that as a...
That's right. That's right.
Ideas.
Yeah, it's correct. In other words, Taryag means the ideas, the concepts of the Torah, right? And the true ideas. The true ideas that you know, people could come to. A person could come to certain true ideas of the Torah. You see that many philosophers came to ideas of that the true value in life is chachma, is not the physical enjoyments. So ideas of God, philosophers have come to. So the ideas of the Torah, a person could, many ideas of the Torah, a person, if he's intelligent and he uses his intellect properly, he'll come to the ideas because they're true ideas. Okay, but he won't be able to come to the Taryag mitzvahs because that requires Chachmas Hashem. A person can't formulate that type of mitzvah without God's knowledge. So that's different. But Taryag mitzvos, you could say, means the Iker ideas of Torah. Okay? So he kept this. He didn't veer from the Derech of Avraham and the true Derech of Chaim he had. And Lavan didn't influence him. Okay? So this is the message that somehow subtly, again, he didn't come out and say it, but he used a term that would somehow convey that message that I'm still bitzidkasi. I didn't compromise my values and my things that I hold. Right? Okay. So this is again like the question that we had. I mean, first of all, so why is he telling Esau this? What is the? How does this promote friendship? I mean, if first of all, is this something Esau values? I mean, if you're saying Esau a Rasha, you're telling him I kept the Torah. Who cares? I mean, is Esau, is that his value system that he would be close to Yaakov because Yaakov kept Tayag. He doesn't care about Tayag. Well, what are you telling him that for? And moreover, if it's something that Esav would recognize as an achievement, so again, what are you telling him your achievements? On the contrary, the two Pshatim and Rashi are in conflict, because the first Pshat was he was playing down his achievements. He didn't establish anything with Lavan. He was a nothing, and now he's telling him, but I'm a big tzaddik. I mean, why are you telling him this? The only effect it could have is to cause him to be jealous of you. What is the purpose of that? Right? I mean, it's just...
Maybe it's another form of being in a state of transience. Like, he did not assimilate to Lavan, so he still conveying the same idea that he did not really...
Establish
roots.
Right.
Because maybe that's the source of his threat to Esav, if he conveys the idea that he has a firmly established root in some community or something.
Okay. So, I mean, you could say that, but that really would be, I mean, the first pshat that Rashi said is, that's the first pshat. That's really... You're saying he's a ger, he didn't establish himself.
The second pshat would be working off of that, but it's kind of like a...
Yeah, the second pshat, it seems, if you just look at the straight pshat, it seems he's telling him, I'm ethically perfected. So if anything, it has nothing to do really directly with being settled down. You're right, indirectly, since I'm perfected, I didn't incorporate myself, fine. But that's sort of a very, very far-reaching deduction. But the plain message is, I'm ethically perfected. So if anything, that would go against what he wants to convey, because the brachos would be intact if he's ethical. If anything, tell the guy that you're corrupt and you're not zochet to the brachos anymore, if that's really what you're trying to accomplish. Here he's telling him, I'm ethically perfected. So if anything, the first thing in Esav's mind would be, okay, so you're zochet to the brachos. That would ignite that fear. That you've retained your tzidkus, and the brachos are going to be chal. It's the worst thing to tell them. Better to be quiet.
Also, would that be conveying any more of an idea?
That he did not attain popular stature, becoming an officer or something. But also, in addition to that he retained his own values in the face of. Assimilation of values, but that doesn't really speak to the Marcus's point.
Right. If anything, I mean, it may have a implication of not assimilating. True, but I think that the other meaning would be far worse. Would be far more detrimental to what you're trying to accomplish. The fact that now he is a tzaddik. What chance do I have of getting the brachos anymore? Okay? So, I mean, on both, it doesn't make sense logically anyways to tell a person that doesn't value the Torah, that I kept the Torah. There's no meaning, no purpose in that. And secondly, it's detrimental. It's detrimental. You're hurting your cause. No need to toot your own horn.
Maybe you can convey dignity?
What's that?
Maybe it could convey dignity and perseverance on the part of Yaakov. And that's something that Esav can relate to.
Right.
Those qualities, even if a person doesn't agree with the goal, the objective.
Right.
He can still agree with the characteristics.
The good characteristics. Right. 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 Okay, but I mean, you see, the first thing, last week, what we were talking about is that he's telling him that he has wealth, so that I could understand, because you're trying to show a person, I'm coming to you because I want to be with you, not because I need you, and not because I want to get something from you. That I could understand, because when somebody befriends you, you're suspicious. Why does this guy want to be my friend? So he's eliminating an ulterior motive by telling him I have things. But to tell him that I'm ethically perfected, that wouldn't eliminate any motive. That you couldn't give the same answer. Right? Why do you want to be my friend? Isn't ethical perfection has nothing to do with it. So it has nothing to do with showing him I really want to be your friend. He's just building himself up. So, okay. But there's another problem here. Okay, aside from just the plain thing, what are you accomplishing? Right? You have another issue because there's a chazal that says that I think the chazal goes Lama Nikra Shmo Sinai. Why is it called Sinai, Har Sinai? So the chazal says Shemisham Yarda Sina Ba'umas Ha'olam. Why? Because from Sinai is the origin of the sinna that the Ummas have against us. That's where it originates from, Sinai. Okay. So that's why the Ummas hate us, because of Sinai. Okay, what does that mean? What does Sinai have to do with? I mean, the Chazal is saying the source of anti-Semitism is the fact that we have the Torah. Okay, why does that? What does having the Torah have to do with anti-Semitism? Right. So you have. It's in Tehillim. Yeah, if you have a Tehillim there. Yeah, thanks. Why should they hate us? Because we have the Torah. Okay, so we have the Torah. So you have your thing, whatever it is. Right? You don't want the Torah. You don't even value the thing. You don't care about it. So why do you hate us? Because we have the Torah.
Nowadays they say that everything is equal. It's
right.
Absolute relativism, I think.
The what?
The complete relativism, that people are just saying, like, oh, you believe in this, and I believe
right,
that.
Right, exactly.
Our beliefs are equal.
Yeah.
But then maybe that's saying that they don't see the Torah, because they see it as equal to everything else.
Right. So they don't see that the Torah is anything of, any superior of anything else. Okay, so why should they hate us? In other words, if you don't have anything superior, and there's a moral equivalence that basically the right thing to do is whatever you think the right thing is. Okay. So then you have no reason to be jealous of us or to hate us. Right? So what is the source of the jealousy and the hatred? Right? It can only stem from the fact that they see that the Torah is the correct thing. They don't really believe that there is a moral equivalence. They know there is a correct system, you see. That's explains the hatred, because they know that the Torah is correct. They know there is a correct way.
How would they know it's correct?
Good question.
I mean, how do we know it's correct? Because of Masorah, because of, I think it's Masorah. They don't have that.
Right. Well, let's put it this way. In the Torah, you do have. Well, here, let me show you this. You see, in Tehillim, it says like this: Lama Ragshu Gayim. That's a lachal. Why Ulaumim Yegurik? Why are the nations angry? You see, so the pasuk at the end of Beis says Al Hashem V'Al Mashicho. The reason why the nations are angry and attack the Jews is against God and his Mashiach. Okay? And that's something the Rambam said in one of his letters also, that when the Jews were being persecuted, the Rambam said, it's not against you. The hatred is not against you, it's against God. You see, the hatred for the Jew is really a hatred against God. Because a person knows that there is a right way to live, that there is a correct way. And he knows that all ways are not equal. You see? But he doesn't want to be bound by that. You see? So, since a person does not want to be bound by that, he's upset at himself. He has a certain feeling of anger at himself that he knows in some way he's not living the right way. You see, how does he know the Torah is the right way? I don't know. But the point is, when a person says, well, everything is good, you see, if you feel it's the right thing, it's the right thing, he's really convincing himself. Because he knows that does not make any sense. You see, he knows that type of logic is false. What?
What would be the difference between a Jew and anybody else then? I mean, anybody else in their religion.
Okay, so, but let's just get the general idea. When a person talks like that, you see, he's trying to convince himself. He knows it's not true. He knows it can't be true. That there's just no correct way to live. There's no better way to live. But any person should just pick his own way. A person knows that's not true. You see? But what happens is that the person tries to suppress that idea. You see? So how does he suppress it? Instead of correcting himself, you see, what he does is he gets angry at the other person that seems to be following a true thing. You see, the correct response is really correct yourself. Don't try to figure out these crazy rationalizations and arguments why everything is the right way. Correct yourself and go and investigate and find out what is the way a person should live. You see? But a person doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to correct himself. So when he sees another person that seems to be following a correct path, he gets angry at him. He says, why are you doing that? You're making me look bad. You see? So the Chazal is saying that when the Goyim, when the Umos HaOlam saw the Torah that the Jews have, they saw they have something true. How they knew it, I don't know. But they saw, when they looked at the way the Jew lives and his life and his value system, they sensed that he has something that's correct. You see? Something is there, you see? Now, what should you do? You're right, you don't know. Is this right? Is this not right? You have to look into it. You have to investigate, you see? But that's what a person should do. If he sees another group has something that looks like it might be something good, you go in and you investigate. You see? Unless you do not want to. You see? You don't want to give up your life and your lifestyle. You see? Because emotionally, you like living. Hefker, you don't want to be told what to do. And it might be that if they have the right thing, now I have to conform to a real thing. The person doesn't want to do that. So you don't want to do it, so don't do it. No problem. What are you getting angry about? You see? Because a person, you see, doesn't want to just not follow the thing and admit that he's doing his thing. You see, if you sense another thing is right, you see, then you have to, instead of correcting yourself, if you're not going to correct yourself, you must obliterate that other thing. You see, you can't have that other thing around, and it might be the right thing, and I sense it is the right thing, and I'm not following it. You can't have that. So you have one of two choices. Either you correct yourself, or you get rid of that guy. You see, there's no other way. You see, to just go along with your path in life and allow that guy to continue means you're just living a crazy life. You're a fool. A person is not going to enjoy his life too much with that type of idea. You see? So he has to either correct himself or get rid of that guy. You see? But that's why the Tehillim says that it's really against Hashem. It's against the idea that there's a right way to do things. You see? It's not you. not a personal thing, you know, like a Jew is. Nothing to do with it. It has to do with one thing, the Torah. The fact that God gave the Torah, and there's something true there. You see, so it doesn't really matter too much how do they know it's true. They might not even know it's true, but there's a sense. You see? And the hatred is because they don't want to follow that sense, and they want to stick to their thing, and therefore they must get rid of the Jew. You see? And that's really, that's what Chazal is saying, and the Tehillim is saying, is the source of all anti-Semitism. That is the source. You see? And that's why you see, if you look at the patterns of the people in the world, what do you have? You have that every, right, you asked about the other religions. So you have Christianity, you have Muslim. Well, look at those religions. What are they? They're an imitation of the Torah. That's what it is. They took the Torah and they modified it. Why do they do that? They have a great religion, so start your own religion. You see? Because they're not starting their own religion. You see, they sense that we have the right thing. That's why they took our thing, you see, and changed it to satisfy their desires. You see? But that's the idea. So you ask, how do they know it? I don't know how they know it, but apparently they do know it, because you see, the entire world took the Torah and copied it and imitated it. They must have some kind of idea. They must have gotten an idea that this is, you got the authentic thing. This is real. You see?
We don't see as much, maybe you do. I'm just like not a. I just don't see it. But how? It seems like you don't see as much anti-Semitism in other religions than you do in Judaism.
Against other religions?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, you don't have anti-Semitism against them because they know it's not real. There's no threat. You know, why should we hate? You're saying why should
saying
Christians?
Like, Christians
no
have this. They took part of the Torah, let's say, right? So now they seems like they have the a direct path of life. Right, the proper
right
way of living.
So that's right. So why doesn't anybody hate them?
Exactly.
Right. Okay, so that shows you. Because people know it's baloney. They're not threatened by it. They know it's a cheap imitation. You see? So there's no threat. There's no threat. I mean, it's a very good point. If you see that a person has a true way of life, that people are jealous, so why is anybody jealous of them? And on the contrary, why do they keep trying to convert us? We're not trying to convert them. You see? But the answer is because they know there's no threat there. They know that's not a real thing. I know. As a matter of fact, I was in a taxi. I was in a taxi once, and very nice taxi driver, was a Muslim guy, and he started talking to me, and he says, you know, he lives in whatever, some neighborhood in Queens where there are a lot of Jews, and he likes living in those neighborhoods. They're very peaceful. It's very nice neighborhood, nice people. You know, you know, you don't have to worry about the crime or anything, and friendly, this and that, and whatever he was talking, and you know, so we started talking, and I don't know how it came up, but he asked, well, don't. Somehow it came up that I said that, you know, Jews are not the Jewish religion. We don't promote conversions. In other words, we're not looking to proselytize or to get other people to become Jewish. And like he seemed very shocked at that. He said, really? He said, really? You don't? I said, no. It's not. He says, why? Why don't you? Why? I said, I mean, I'm not going to go into it, but I just said, I don't know, it's not part of our thing. Like, we're happy if you have your thing, you know, that's good. We're not looking, we want our thing, and you can have your thing. It's not, there's no competition. We're not looking for that. And like, he was like, he couldn't understand it, you see? Because that's the reason, because to him, you see, it's, if you have something that's not real, you have to get other people to join, because it's a question against your system. But if you have something real, then how can you have a question against the system? It doesn't make any sense. Another guy's doing something that's crazy. Okay, it's not a question on me. You know what I mean? So their whole mode of operation shows you that they have that recognition. Otherwise, none of these things would make sense. Yes, it's amazing. It's an amazing thing. Amazing. Yeah.
That idea that like that people become threatened by what they see as like true or sense as true, and then they need to isolate or destroy that thing.
Yeah.
Like it only makes sense that would exist for other religions too. And people do kill each other for religion, like Muslims and Christians and Buddhists and Hindus and whatever it is. But
right.
So if that's true, that people are just threatened by truth in general,
yeah.
or like waves of truth. And also Jews, like if Jews are living secular lives where their lives are not oriented with Torah, they're going to be less of a threat, which would explain why, like in the United States, there's not really that much anti-Semitism, because a lot of Jews are just Jews, like culturally, and they don't really threaten their peers.
So that's a good question. So is that the solution? Would that resolve? I mean, obviously not a solution, because we can't give up the Torah, but would that resolve the problem? Seems so, right?
You're saying based
that,
on. You're not saying
because if
allowed,
they think
problem,
what
isn't that love in
the
Torah?
It's love in the Torah,
and I think it's
right.
True,
but Adam's saying if just aside from right aside from the Torah and what we're obviously what we have
yeah.
to do.
That wasn't true in like Germany.
That would seem right.
I think
that wasn't
is,
true in Germany.
I think it is.
You see, but
it wasn't.
I think in Germany it's because there was a contradiction, because you had Jews who were trying to be part of secular society, and you had Jews who were still living in like the shtetl and like still carried that marker with them. And like the Holocaust.
No, but he's right. In other words, Germany was the most greatest assimilation was in Germany. Because Germany was a very liberal, tolerant society. And the Jews assimilated to a large degree there. There are many assimilated Jews. And yet you see that that's where the anti-Semitism, the core of the anti-Semitism was in a place where you had the Jews that were irreligious. So on the contrary,
yeah.
And that's really the way a person feels.
That.
What's that?
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, I see that. Here
Germany, I think it was.
Well,
I think Germany.
How did you
like it was definitely like very like Jews were assimilating a lot. But I think like I'm from my impression from whatever reading I've done in this area, it shows that like because the Jews were still considered exotic and different, and they started becoming part of like the aristocracy or like the upper classes, like that became. They became threatening at that point.
Doesn't
and then they
religion, that has nothing to do with their level of observance.
Why not?
Because that you're saying that they're so socioeconomic.
Because they still carry with them their Jewish like markers. But if you get rid of those things, then there wouldn't be a problem. Like in the United States today, like when you say,
show
oh, I'm Jewish, I celebrate Hanukkah.
What's
that? Like,
show up to work in like, you know, in a suit and tie and not your...
You're
assimilated.
You're
carved.
Not
completely assimilated, but because they were in transitions. You had a community of Jews who a lot of them were trying to assimilate, but then they're coming from shtetl backgrounds.
Right.
You can't really. It's not.
But this was. I mean, this was generations.
Okay. So.
A generation of assimilation.
At least a generation of maybe their parents were like. But a lot of those Jews that were persecuted at the time were not. Were themselves very secular. Secularized in general, coming. So that's my my grandfather came from. He was around a lot of Jews at the time, but none of them were really identified. They were identified first as Germans,
wow.
Jews. They were.
So that's something that has to be explained. In other words, that guy in that book is saying that the reason why is because they had an idea of the Jew that they was strange to them, and then these people were now assimilating. So he's saying somehow that. That excited like
yeah,
the hatred.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, but that's something we have to explain. If that is, you know, to understand. But on the surface, he's giving an explanation. That's fine. But on the surface, you see, it would seem, right, there's a kasha. Right? On the surface, there's a kasha. Because here you have a country where Jews are assimilated, and yet you have the worst anti-Semitism. So it would seem it should be the opposite. It should be that should relieve the anti-Semitism when they see, okay, this is a Jew, but hey.
Right.
You see, it would seem that should diminish the anti-Semitism. It shouldn't increase it. Okay, so that we have to understand. Why does it increase it? Okay. But so, Okay, so it's a good question. It's a good question. And would that be a solution? If the Jews would just give up the Torah, would that solve the whole problem? Because if that's the source of the hatred, so then if the Jews give it up, they'll like us. We're like one of them. You see? Okay. But let's just get back to this point here. Okay? Because now the problem becomes magnified. Because what we're saying is that why do the Umos HaOlam hate the Jew? Because the Jew's lifestyle is making them insecure. That the Jew is following a true Torah. Tayag mitzvahs are true. That's the way a person should live. And this causes the hatred because the person feels, the person who's not following it feels angry that he's not following it. So his reaction is he hates the person that does it. So it would seem that why, on the contrary, Yaakov is making the problem even worse. Because he's telling Esav, I follow Tayag mitzvahs. Oh, now I have another reason to hate you. Because you're doing something that I should be doing. I have to obliterate you. So what did Yaakov do? He gave Esav another reason to hate him. Doesn't make any sense. It's the worst hatred that a person has is the hatred for a Jew. So what did Yaakov do? He told him, I'm following Tayag mitzvahs. That's something, don't mention that. That's the last thing you want to say. Right?
Yeah. Esav, though. Back there when I said about
Tayag. Don't.
Right. Tayag, what's that? What is that?
Rabbi Marcus.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm fully clear on what's going on. Can you just clarify the situation again? I was trying to figure out how it was connected.
Oh, okay.
With everything, I'm kind of a little bit lost.
Okay, were you did you were you here from the beginning, or did you sign in?
I was here from the beginning.
Okay.
I was here from the beginning.
Okay, so here, so because the pasuk says that Yaakov told Esav, "Im Lavan Garti," that I dwelt with Lavan, and now I'm coming to be your friend. So Rashi says, why does he say "Im Lavan Garti"? So one of the second pshat in Rashi is because Garti in Gematria is Taryag. So what Yaakov was trying to convey in some concealed way is that I kept all Taryag mitzvos when I was with Lavan, and I wasn't influenced by his rishis. I didn't compromise my principles. So he told that message to Esav, supposedly to get Esav to like him as a means of brotherhood, that he told him, I kept Tayag mitzvos. Okay? So our question was, how is that something that causes a person to feel close to you? On the contrary, number one, you're bragging that you're a big tzaddik. You didn't compromise your principles at all. Number two, does Esav care about Tayag mitzvos? He's a totally different lifestyle. He doesn't care about that. So why are you trying to impress him with something he doesn't care about? It's like going to a guy who's, an NBA star and tell him, you know what I do? I learn all day. Okay, well, look at you. Okay, what is that? Cool. Right? Or going to a Talmid Chacham and telling him, I'm a great basketball player. I mean, there's two different worlds. So why are you, why was Yaakov trying to get Esav to realize that he keeps Tayag mitzvos, as if Esav is concerned with that? Okay, so you have two problems. Number one, the message he's conveying is not something that Esav cares about or values. Number two, if anything, you are igniting more hatred and jealousy by telling the person that you're a tzaddik, that you're ethically perfected. And number three, we brought in a medrash, a chazal, that says that the reason why the Umos HaOlam hate the Jew is because the Jew has the Torah. He was given the Torah at Sinai. Why? Because the Torah, the Umos HaOlam know the Torah is true. They know it is a good way of life, and they feel bad that they are not keeping it. So instead of correcting and improving themselves, they try to wipe out the source of their guilt, which is the Jew. So on the third score, it's also nonsensical for Yaakov to tell Esav that I'm a complete tzaddik. He's making Esav feel insecure. Okay, so that was our question. Those three questions. Okay, so we
right.
were... Right, now we were just explaining what's the idea that the Umos HaOlam hate the Jew because of the Torah. So we were showing that if a person feels that another person has something that's really correct and he doesn't have it and he won't change himself, then the only option he has is to get rid of that other guy. So that he won't be reminded that he's living in a foolish way. Okay? So that's the question. Why did Yaakov tell Esav that he's keeping the Torah? Why did he do that? Yeah.
It is in relation to being with Laban. I mean, so it seems like he was taking like a little risk over here, but he was showing him... I mean, just saying that out is taking a risk, because Esav is going to hate him for that.
That's right.
Right. But at the same time, he's showing him that, listen, Laban wasn't a great guy either. Right? Laban
right.
was doing all of his things. But at the same time, I was able to be with him, keeping my ways,
okay.
and being able to live in his house. So you see, Esav, like, it's not a big deal. Right?
Uh-huh.
We can still, no matter if I have my path of keeping the ideas, it's okay. You can still keep on doing what you're doing.
Uh-huh. In other words, it shouldn't be a barrier. I'm able to keep my thing, and also to have a relationship with a person that doesn't have the value system. I can interact with people that have a different value system, and I'm fine with that. You see, I was with Laban for so many years. I kept my thing, he kept his thing. We coexisted. So that's what he's showing Esav. We can coexist. You don't have to give up your thing, and I don't have to give up my thing.
Why is he mentioning that he's like a noble?
What's that?
Why is he mentioning lo shar sarav choshev?
He didn't say it, then he didn't see it.
Oh, the first shot?
Right.
He might be threatened by that.
Okay, the first...
Oh, I thought it was one... Oh, I'm sorry.
Two different shots. Yeah, because the first shot... Yeah, the first shot we said, because he wants to show him, I didn't become anything important. So the barachos are obviously not going to be in my lifetime. Because you see, I didn't establish myself. So there he's there. That makes sense. He's showing him, you don't have to worry about the barachos. It wasn't chal on me. Didn't have realization on me. But the second pshat is a different pshat. There he's saying, I'm a tzaddik. Nothing to do with the brachos, I'm a tzaddik. So the question is, why is he telling that? Okay, so Yisrael's saying, because he's showing him that there shouldn't be a conflict between us. I can be a tzaddik, you can have your value system, and we can coexist, just like with Laban. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, isn't he like, Laban, though, is... He's saying, like, meaning, then he's also implying by saying that it would be difficult for, because he's equating him with Laban then,
yeah.
that type of lifestyle.
Right.
So then he's saying it would be difficult. You would have a habamina to think it would be difficult to
right.
coexist.
Right. You would have a habamina to think I can't coexist with you.
Right. But why? I don't understand why that would be a problem for Esav. Like, why would Esav care about coexisting with him? Like, why would that be a concern of Esav?
Okay. Right, why should Esav?
Does he want to be conciliatory? He wants to be brothers, friends with Esav.
Okay. So he's showing... I mean, he's showing him...
He wants to kill him, if anything. Like, that's what he thinks, so why would he tell him that? But I mean, if he wants to tell him that, then why would he say... Why would he assume that Esav has his Havamina that they can't coexist? If from his perspective at the time, he thinks that Esav wants to kill him. But that doesn't seem like you would really...
I see.
You know what I'm saying?
You mean, right, in other words, you're saying like this, if you're speaking to a person that wants to be, you both want to join, the only thing is, that person has a concern that maybe I can't join up with this guy, he's too righteous for me, he, you know, won't work.
Right.
You know, we want to be partners, but it's not going to work, so now I have to allay his concern and show him, look, it'll work, because I'm righteous, but I'm still able to function with everybody else. Right, but if a guy's coming to kill you, that's not the thing you're trying to address.
Right.
He's trying to kill you. He's not trying to join with you. So why are you telling him, oh, I could join with you, don't worry? What do you mean? The guy wants to kill you.
Right.
That's a good question. There's nothing he's addressing. He's addressing the wrong issue.
It's only one part of the idea he's addressing the issue. There's many other factors he's bringing to him.
Right. But is this...
This alone can stand.
Right.
But either the first part of learning regarding Imlov and Garki saying that, the bracha is not fulfilled yet, or sending him, or what he has...
Right.
Sending him the sheep and, you know, only the land and not from him. Like, all these ideas combined seems like to bring together the full picture.
Right. But the only thing is that if you're going to say that way, that this will convince Esav that we can coexist, right? But the only thing is, then what about the other problem, that this will cause the sinner on his... You're right, I could coexist with you. But the problem is not me, the problem is you. That you can't coexist with me. And now it's even harder for you to coexist with me because now you know I keep tanyag mitzvahs. So now you're going to hate me for that. Right, so the argument would make sense if it's Yaakov that's having the problem. So Yaakov could show Esav, I don't have a problem with you, don't worry. I can coexist. But the problem is not Yaakov, the problem is Esav. And now what you just told him will generate a whole new source of hatred. That you keep the Torah and I don't.
I
have another alternative.
I'm sorry?
I have another alternative.
Good.
I'm thinking it's very possible to think about it like this. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm assuming that we could think about it in this way. There are two ways to appeal to someone. One way is the emotional appeal, and one way is the intellectual appeal. So if Yaakov can't really, you know, appeal to Esav in the more emotional, hey, I'm your brother, in this response, then at least explain to him in the more intelligent way. Say, hey, you know, I keep a certain value system, the Tariyag Mitzvot, and, you know, with that in mind, like, I'm a good person, and, you know, like, basically what I'm trying to say is that when you appeal to someone in a more intellectual way, maybe instead of his hatred being towards just his brother, will understand that he's a person that does a lot more than just being, you know, like, he's a lot more than just being his brother. Like, he does a lot of good, and he does a lot for, you know, like, he's a righteous person. So maybe he would oversee, Esav would oversee all of his brother for what he is, and see him for just being an intellectual scholar person. Maybe, that's what I'm thinking, something like that.
That's very good, very good. Very good. And as you're saying, it's a totally different approach. Show the person that I'm righteous, and that appeal to him on a different plane. Show him a rational thing that, look at all the good I do. It's right.
Values that in the first place.
I'm sorry?
Wouldn't that only work if Esav values that type of lifestyle?
Values that, right.
In the first
place. If Esav values that. Only if Esav values that. And also, the problem is that's what we're saying, why the Goyim hate the Jew, because the Jew is showing them, I mean, but that's a good approach. In other words, because our question is, number one, Esav doesn't recognize this. Number two, that's why the guy hates the Jew, because the Jew is doing something right. So why doesn't the Jew? So if I can appeal to the goyim on a rational sense. Hey, look what I'm doing, a good thing. Then how could they hate me? They should. But you're right in the sense, you're right like this, that there is a hatred, but there's also a person has to be rational. A person can't be totally irrational. What you're saying, Jakey, what you're saying is correct. In other words, like
yes,
this.
Yes, that's what I did.
That's right. A person cannot be totally irrational. He can't be. You see, he can have a hatred, but he has to have some kind of a rational justification for the hatred. You can't hate a guy, and because you hate him, you're just going to act like a total lunatic. Unless you're one of these, you know, ISIS or crazy. But even them, okay? So the thing is, if you hate a person, you see, even an ISIS, they have a philosophy. They have some kind of rationalization. But you can't act totally irrational. Nobody could do that, you see? So the thing is like this. It is true that when Esav finds out that Yaakov keeps Tarjag Mitzvos, you see, there is a hatred because he's doing the right thing and I'm not, you see? But the question is, you have to be able to unleash the hatred. You can't just kill a guy because you hate him, because there's another force in the mind. The force in the mind is we have to act rationally, you see? So the only way I can unleash the hatred is if I could find a Pesach, you see? If I could find an excuse, I could say, this is justified. This guy is a corrupt guy, you see? But if the person is really a righteous person, you can't walk over to the guy and just kill him. I mean, unless you're insane. What are you going to say in your mind? You have to have some reason. Why am I killing the man? Because he's living the right way?
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible.
We just said that's why people hate the Jews.
That is why they hate them. But that's not why they persecute them. Because to persecute, to carry out the hatred, you need a matir. You still need an excuse. You see, the fact that you hate the guy is not enough of an excuse. You must have an excuse. So the excuse has to be that you found something that he deserves it. You found a pagam, a defect in the guy. If you don't find a defect, you can't do it. You see, that's why I'll give you a interesting thing. I read about Rav Moshe. Somebody wrote a biography that he was in Russia when the communists took over. And they were getting rid of all the Jews. They wanted to wipe out Judaism. They were eradicating every sign of Judaism, anybody who kept halacha, and a lot of rabbanim were sent to the Siberia, you see? But they came to Reb Moshe, you see, and they were asking the authorities, whatever it was, they came to him, they brought him in, and they could not do anything against him. You see, and the person that wrote the book, they didn't touch him. They would not touch him. Because what did he say? Whatever he said to them, I don't know. But he said, you know, whatever way he spoke to them, you see, the person that wrote the book said that there was a certain fear of him. You see, who was he? A little guy? You see? But the thing is that you can't, if you hate a person, you have to find some trait, some element that justifies the hatred. So you could see, the guy's a petty guy, the guy did this, the guy did that. But if you talk to the guy and you see that the guy likes you, he's friendly, he has nothing against you, and he has no motives, nothing that you can justify your jealousy or your hatred, you can't just kill a guy. It's impossible. You see? So that's what Yaakov said. He said, I kept Tarjag Mitzvos, did not corrupt my way. So now Esav could not attack him. Could not do it. You see, it's true he hated him, but he couldn't do it. You see? That's why if you read, I read in Mein Kampf, okay? He does say there, you see, he writes about the Jews, and he says, the Jews, he says disparaging things, They don't keep their religion. He says that in there. They did not keep their religion. You see? So you cannot, if you have a group of people that are purely righteous, you might hate them. How are you going to walk over and kill them? Can't do it. You see, you have to hold the hatred in. Because every person has a sense, has a guilt, and a sense of rationality. And he can't do an insane action. I killed the guy. Why? I don't know why. Can't do it. You see? So if you kill a guy, you have to say, what do you mean? You see, look what he did. You have to have something. You see, you can't say I killed him because he's righteous. So the only way to unleash the hatred is if the person does not act properly. Then you have an excuse. You see? Then you can attack. So that's why you find that the in Germany, you see, they were not following the Torah. You see? They were assimilated. So now the assimilation, you see, doesn't get rid. The mistake the Jew thinks is if I assimilate, they won't hate me. Because why do they hate me? I'm different. It doesn't work that way. Because they know that you're a Jew. And that hatred is not for you. It's for God. You see? It's for the Torah. So you might not be keeping the Torah, but you are the person that represents this lifestyle. Because you're a Jew. You came from that nation. You are a Jew. You see? So the fact that you are a Jew means the hatred of the Torah and the true way of life and God is represented in you. No way to get rid of that. You see? The only thing is, can we unleash the hatred? Now we can unleash it. Because you see, you are not doing what you're supposed to be doing. You say there's a right way of life. Why aren't you living that way? You see? Now we have an excuse to kill you. You are a corrupt person. You don't keep this. You don't keep that. I see you're driving on Shabbos. Well, look at your Torah. You're not allowed to drive on Shabbos. Why aren't you? You see? That is the thing.
They're killing us because we're not following the Torah?
Not following the Torah. No, they're killing us because of the Torah. Because the Torah is against their whole life. But they have an excuse to kill us if we don't keep it. You see? Not keeping it does not remove the hatred. Because the hatred's not of you. It's not a personal hatred. You see, the person feels that you hate a Jew. It's a personal hatred. I'm different than them. I'm this, I'm that. Not a personal hatred. It's the concept of Sinai that they hate. You see? And you represent that concept. But the only way you are protected from that hatred is if you keep it. Because if you keep it, you take away their matir. It's impossible to kill you if you keep it. You're perfectly righteous, you can't harm the guy. How could you harm the guy? You see? But now you see the guy's not righteous. He's not. Because, again, they know there's something true there. They know there is something real there. If they didn't think there was anything real there, then you're right. They wouldn't hate you, and that would be it. That would be the end of the thing. But they know you have a real thing. And now they see you're not keeping it. You see? So that gives them an excuse to unleash the hatred. In their mind, it doesn't make sense. If you're asking me, does it make sense? Well, why are you killing me? Because I'm not keeping the thing, but you don't hold by the thing. You see? That's not the way the mind works. You see, if they would say that, they would say, well, I don't hold by the thing, so why am I killing the guy? You're right. But like I said, what controls a guy is not so much his conscious thoughts. It's his the subconscious, you see. And subconsciously, there's something bothering him in his life. He knows his life is not what it should be. And he knows it's never going to be what it should be. You see? And what's the thing in his mind that keeps bothering him? Is he knows there's a real thing out there. You see? Now, whatever he could do to eradicate that thought, he's going to do. You see? But it has to be within reason. You see? So it has to be within some kind of mechanism in the mind. You see? Now, to walk over to a guy that's a righteous person, you can't do. But to walk over to a guy that maybe maybe is not so honest in business, maybe this, maybe that, maybe he's trying to, he's just as into tithes as me. Yeah, who is this guy? He's, you know. So that you could do. You see? That's why Yaakov told him the thing. And that's why if you look at any anti-Semitic thing, they give justification. They always give a justification. You see? And the justification, I'm telling you, if you look through this Mein Kampf, you will see he accuses the... Well, that's the accusation of the Jew, that they're morally corrupt. You see, moral corruption, they're controlling the world, they're underhanded, they're doing this, they're doing that. Moral corruption, you see? But you can't claim moral corruption if there is absolutely none. If the person is a righteous group, a person can't be totally irrational. It's impossible. You see? So a person can't do it. He could claim moral corruption. Of course, the claims might not be justified. You see? But there has to be something that they see that justifies it in their mind. You see? And if they don't see anything, they can't do it. Okay? So that would explain, really, why you find that in the place where the Jews were the least observant and the Torah was the least prominent in the minds, that's where the anti-Semitism was. That's where the greatest anti-Semitism was. You see, because in the back of the mind, they say, hey, you're not keeping this thing. You're not keeping it even. Hey, one second. You guys who have the real thing, you're not keeping it? Ah. Now we can really get rid of it. See? If we get rid of you, now we can really get rid of it. You see? And we're justified, because you yourself don't keep it. That's the thing. And that's why you find in the Torah that it says that if you keep the Torah, you see, you will be protected from the anti-Semitism. But if you go away from the Torah, then the anti-Semitism will become ignited. You see, it's not just a mystical idea that God said, well, if you keep it, I'm going to stand in the way, I'm going to protect you and stop them from thinking of hatred. And if you don't keep it, well, then I'm gonna get them to think to hate you and to carry out acts against you. It's not just a mystical thing. If there's a natural concept there. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the covert message, right?
I'm sorry. The what?
This is the covert message, right?
Covert, yes.
What was the point of the overt message, though?
The overt message was. That's a good question.
Tell him where he's been for the last 30 years.
Yeah, it's just factual information. Yeah.
I've been living here for 30 years and I have some wealth.
Right.
Is it just explain his absence?
Oh, he has been a covert. I mean, he wanted to convey these things and. Yeah, I mean, he's. Maybe. Let's think about it. It's a good question.
So, according to what we're saying,
yeah.
Then the millions of Jews who did not assimilate, who were killed in the Holocaust, were most likely killed because there was a matir by the German Jews and it extended it to the European Jews?
Yeah. I mean, once the hatred is unleashed, that's it. Not going to go, hey, well, you, okay. You're okay. Because obviously then that would mean that they know what they're doing and they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what the underlying forces of hatred are. It's just a feeling that's being unleashed. But once that feeling is unleashed, that's it. There's no, they're not going to differentiate. You see, it's all of these processes are occurring underneath the surface. You see, they don't know why is being unleashed? I don't know, but I hate them. You see, and now I could. They don't know why they feel free. To why the feeling of guilt is gone, why it's diminished. They don't know, but they know that we hate them and we have to get rid of them. You see, but these are the thoughts that occur to set that whole process up in the mind. Once those feelings are unleashed, that's it. It's you know, it's not being channeled anywhere.
Which Tehillim was that about the?
It's Tehillim Beis. It's right in the beginning. First pasuk, first and second pasuk.
And it's the Rashi that brings down Imbej on that pasuk.
The what?
And Rashi brings down something like a Medrash on that pasuk.
Oh, on the what do you call it from Sinai? Why? Yeah. I don't know, I gotta find where that's from. I don't think it's from here. Let me see if I can find where it's from.
Thank you, Bajalis.
Okay, Adam.
Rabbi.
Yes.
So basically what I'm thinking now also is that because so you're saying that the more someone is in depth and involved in the system of the values and Torah and the Torah system,
yep.
That's more of a strength because they're involved in it and there's a group that is also involved in it. That's stronger than saying, "Hey, I'm a Jew, but I'm not as affiliated."
That's right, exactly. If you're a Jew and you're not affiliated, so you have the negative. You have the fact that the nations will hate you because they hate the idea of the Torah. You see, you represent that lifestyle, so you are the object of hate. And you have nothing to justify to protect yourself against the hate. Because you're not even keeping the thing that is that they know is real. You're not even keeping it. You see, so therefore, the hatred has an opening. You know what I mean? In other words, it works because the hatred is not against you, it's against the Torah. So now, you just represent the Torah. Whether you keep it or you don't, you still are a Jew, you represent that idea. So there's hatred for you regardless. Now, there's a second step. In order for a person to attack you, it's not enough to have hatred. He must have an opening to allow himself, like you were mentioning, a rationale. He must be able to justify the hatred to carry it into action. There are two things. There's the emotion, and then there's transforming it into action. To transform an emotion into action, you must have a justification. You see? So that's where observance comes into the picture. If a person observes the Torah, it reduces the justification. Like you said, well, the guy's a great guy, he's helping everybody. Esav, can't you see how nice and helpful this person is? Why would you just go attack a person like that? So you're uprooting the justification, not the hatred. The hatred's there. But what you're doing is you're showing him rationally, control yourself. The man is a righteous man. You see? So that's what Yaakov was doing. He was introducing a rational source of control. But if you don't keep the Torah, you can't introduce a rational source of control. So now where's the control going to come from? Now you're in trouble.
But then I'd have another problem.
Okay.
But there's two issues. Then what I'd say is, regardless of the fact that you bring that rationality out of Esau, the point is that that he's also Esav, Yaakov is also Esav's brother. There's a huge emotion. So regardless, one might be concerned that the emotion would still take over the intellect and the rationality. And then my second issue would be is that Esav could still be an emotionless killer. Like, he doesn't really care. He's evil. Like, why does it matter? You know?
Right. But Yaakov could only employ strategies insofar as there was a possibility of effectuating a change. In other words, if it's impossible to influence Esav, so nothing will work. But what Yaakov was doing was he was saying, based on the possibility that I can influence Esav, how should I proceed? You see, so he said, if there's a possibility that Esav could be influenced, this is the correct logical approach. If he can't be influenced, there's nothing to talk about. You see, but he didn't know whether he was subject to influence or not. So therefore, he had to assume that it's possible he could be subject to influence. So let me provide a rational influence.
Kind of like his last alternative.
That's right, exactly. That's right. He's just covering the bases.
Right.
Like he also was mespalel. I'll have tefillah too. That's a factor too. You see, all of these, and he prepared for war. So he's preparing for every contingency.
Right, he has no choice. He has to see what all the options are and figure out what's the best route, I guess.
That's correct.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, Jakey.
I'll see you later. I'll be here for Shabbat.
Oh, very good. Okay, great. See you later.
See you later.
Take care. Bye-bye. I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense. In other words, you're not going to remove the hatred by assimilating, because the hatred's, you know, that's what the Pasuk in Tehillim says, the hatred's not against you, so it's an automatic hatred from Sinai. Now the only question is, every time a person hates somebody, he doesn't kill them. So there has to be the right conditions to transform the hatred into action.
How exactly was this conveyed, actually?
I'm sorry?
How was this how was the covert message conveyed, exactly? I mean, Rashi has the Gematria, but how was that actually given over to Esav?
Right. You know, how did he know? How are you going to figure out?
Right.
The guy to me is Tayag. That's a good question. Good question. Where in the Mashmas of Pasuk is there any indication that I wasn't, that I didn't, well, I guess ger means I didn't assimilate with him.
Right.
I remained distinct.
But you also have to say that Esav has an idea of what Tayag is.
That's right.
You also knew that Yaakov was a psych from beforehand.
That's right.
If he didn't change, he's still a psych.
That's right. That's right. You see, he used the term ger. So why do you use ger? So this Pshat is saying, he used ger to show. Ger means I didn't settle, I didn't assimilate. So what was the message? Was the message I didn't assimilate, meaning now I'm not chashuv, I didn't establish anything, so you don't have to worry about the brachos? Or was it he was trying to convey, I didn't assimilate, he didn't influence me. I'm still the same Yaakov, so why would you hate me? I didn't do anything wrong. Yeah, he's definitely appealing to the rational faculty. And you need the rational faculty to carry it into action. You need some kind of rationale. And that was seemingly clear. You need a rationale. You're going to just kill a guy? But it was amazing that they said that Moshe, that a lot of Rabbanim leaders were sent to Siberia, and they were looking for something. That was it. They said that they brought him into the station. They were looking for something to peg on him, you know, to find something that would justify them getting rid of him. I could not find anything. Like, they asked him, well, what do you think about the Russian government? What do you think about this new government? So he said, well, we're very grateful for everything that the government does for us and every all the help that whatever they do for us, I mean, we're grateful. You know what I mean? But in other words, you can tell when you listen to a guy how he's saying it, if he's sincere or if he's pulling your leg. So you could imagine when he would say that, he probably really meant it. Listen, we don't have any, you know, we're not entitled to things. You're helping us, the government helping us. You know, he probably really meant it. Like, okay, he's not going to tell them, but, you know, you're also Rishayim, but, you know, but probably he is, when he conveys a thing, he's looking at that factor, and he really believes that. That, well, okay, you might be a Russia, but you are helping us. So insofar as you're helping us, we're grateful. And probably when, you know, you listen to a guy like that, you could sense that he's that a certain kind of, you know, purity. So they said that they really were like almost afraid of him. Like they would not go near him. You know, they wouldn't do anything against him. You know, so it shows you like they have a respect, a certain kind of respect, and unless they could find something against you, they can't even think about harming you. Which is true, but you can see that's true. Yeah, it's an amazing thing that the assimilation brings about. And then they say the same thing with in the Megillah with Purim, that in they were assimilating. They came to the party. I think that was one of the chaits, that they were assimilating into the society. They partook of the party. They were partaking of the society, becoming assimilated into the society. And that right away, you have the hatred. See the difference in that explanation. What Adam was saying, what he read, that's like a very, you know, Balabantish type of thing. Well, the guy was, you know, they were, the Jews were so strange, and now they're incorporating into our society, we've become very afraid. I mean, what do you mean? Well, if they're incorporating, so now you see that they're not strange, that they're regular like you, so that should take away the fear. It made any sense. On the surface, it sounds like, oh, yeah, right. Keep away from us, but it doesn't make any sense. All right.
Jeff.
Very good.
You ready for Shabbos?
Already, right. Yeah.
You ready?
What's that?
I'm ready.
Hey.
Exciting.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely, you know, I guess a lot of, you know, it's whatever. Lot goes into it, you know, planning.
Not that I'm doing any of it, but, you know, the moving, you know, maybe.
Stay as far away as
a lot to take care of. Yeah, there's a lot to take care of, and, you know, try to just keep your.
Do your part and keep your distance.
Right, exactly. Let's see, this one's just going.
Have a good Shabbos.
Okay, yeah, you too.
Shabbos.
Okay, yeah, take care.